Welcome to Redmond Radio and MCP Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of MCPMag.com. Today is October 9th, and here's what you'll hear in this week's episode. A Windows-hosted environments exam beta. Microsoft appeals the fine imposed by the EU for antitrust violations. A look at anti-piracy measures in the upcoming Windows Vista. And a Patch Tuesday preview. Plus, IT web gems later in this show. First, this quick break here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Welcome back, and thanks once again for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. As usual, before I start the first segment, I'd like to do some housekeeping. First, remember that I'm giving away a Redmond t-shirt a week to one lucky listener whose name gets drawn out of a hat. If you'd like to enter to win one, it's simple, really. Just send me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com with Redmond t-shirt on the subject line of your message. I'll announce the winner in the IT Web Gems segment later on in this podcast. And speaking of podcasts, I'd like to say thanks if you're downloading this show by iTunes or Juice. I've noticed more listeners getting the show that way in the last few weeks. And if you'd like to get it this way and listen automatically, here's a quick lesson. Go to the iTunes site at www.apple.com/iTunes/download and download the version of iTunes you prefer. Open up iTunes and then click on Advanced, Subscribe to Podcast. This opens up a URL window where you enter the URL mcpmag.com/rss/podcasts. You'll see that there's a subscribe button next to our show when it pops up as an option. Click that and then the last 10 shows will be fetched by iTunes. You don't have to use iTunes, of course. There are other versions, including one from SourceForge at juicereceiver.sourceforge.net or iPodder's apps at iPodder.org. Remember to pass on the good news to your colleagues if you also find this show worthwhile. The number of listeners who download the show automatically is growing, but as always, I can use more. Now, let's get back to the news. One certification item comes from Microsoft. If an item posted on the Pearson View testing site is to be believed, Microsoft is set to release a new exam for IT professionals who work for web hosting companies. That exam is 7501TS, Windows Server 2003 Hosted Environments, Configuration and Management, which is set for a beta testing from October 13th through the 26th. The exam name implies that it's aimed at candidates who work for web hosting companies who run Windows Server 2003 in a hosted environment. Microsoft hasn't mentioned a new certification track under the MCP program that would match this exam, so we can assume that the exam is aimed at certified partners who want to fulfill the hosting solutions requirements under the Advanced Infrastructure Solutions competency. Currently, companies who want to fulfill the hosting solutions requirements need only hire or contract with two individuals who have a Microsoft Certified Professional Certificate. No exam objective guide was posted on the Microsoft MCP site as of this broadcast. And that's it for cert news, so let's turn to the Business Wire. Prosecutors filed criminal charges last week against Hewlett-Packard's former chairwoman and four others involved in the corporate spying scandal that has shaken the Silicon Valley tech giant long revered for its ethics and professionalism. California Attorney General Bill Lockyer accused two ousted HP insiders, Chairwoman Patricia Dunn and Chief Ethics Officer Kevin Hunsicker, and three outside investigators, Ronald D'Elia, Matthew DePonte, and Brian Wagner, of violating state privacy laws in HP's crusade to root out the source of boardroom leaks. They each face four felony counts: use of false or fraudulent pretenses to obtain confidential information from a public utility, unauthorized access to computer data, identity theft, and conspiracy to commit each of those crimes. Each charge carries a fine of up to $10,000 and 3 years in prison. Apple CEO Steve Jobs apologized last week for the company's past stock option practices after a three-month internal investigation raised concerns over how some grants were handled between 1997 and 2002. Apple also announced the resignation of former Chief Financial Officer Fred Anderson from the company's board of directors. The company said Jobs knew that some grants had been given favorable dates in a few instances, but he did not benefit from them and was not aware of the accounting implications. The probe found irregularities in the recording of stock option grants made on 15 dates between 1997 and 2002, the company said. the grants made had no dates that preceded the approval of those grants. More than 100 other companies nationwide are entangled in similar stock option trouble. In most of the instances, companies have traced their problems to backdating issues. Under this practice, insiders could make the rewards more lucrative by retroactively pinning the option's exercise price to a low point in the stock's value. Apple has said it will have to restate some earnings as a result. The looming restatements threaten to wipe out some of the profit generated during the most prosperous stretch of Apple's 30-year history as millions of consumers snapped up the company's ubiquitous iPod. Apple has reported profits totaling $3.1 billion during the past 4 years. Yahoo has struck a deal with HP to plant its internet search engine on millions of computers, the latest volley in a high-stake battle with Google and Microsoft. The agreement requires HP to set up its desktop and notebook PCs in North America, so Yahoo's search engine appears in the toolbar of Microsoft's Internet Explorer 7, the next version of the web's most widely used browser. Yahoo is hoping that the toolbar would generate more search requests, providing a springboard for more ad revenue. The U.S. Commerce Department promised last week to take more of a hands-off approach to the Internet as it extended for 3 years its oversight of a California organization that handles network address issues. Internet registrars, some foreign governments, and other critics of the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers have complained about the U.S. oversight role, saying the group sometimes makes decisions that don't reflect the Internet community at large. Under the new agreement, the Commerce Department will continue to provide expertise and advice on methods and administrative procedures to encourage greater transparency, accountability, and openness, according to the agreement. No specific initiatives were announced. Semiconductor sales worldwide surged to a monthly record of $20.5 billion in August, fueled by higher demand for memory chips used in PCs and mobile gadgets, such as cell phones and digital cameras. The figure was more than 10% higher than the $18.6 billion reported in August 2005, and a slight increase from the $20.1 billion reported in July, the Semiconductor Industry Association said. The previous one-month record for worldwide chip sales was $20.4 billion, in November 2005. Much of the growth in August was driven by higher sales of DRAM chips, which increased by 31.4% from a year ago. How about some product news? First up, storage virtualization vendor DataCore Software is shipping its San Melody Virtualization Infrastructure Foundation, a low-cost entry-level virtualization solution for small and mid-sized businesses. The package starts at less than $1,000 and is designed to enable customers to automate management of storage resources across multiple systems via Ethernet IP-based networks. Among the features is a capability known as thin provisioning, or auto-grow, to enable customers to flexibly take advantage of disk space as it's needed. The product is a member of DataCore's San Melody product line. The San Melody Virtualization Infrastructure Foundation enables customers to leverage existing Ethernet and IP LAN network internet connections through support of iSCSI and to optimize storage space and automate capacity utilization across many servers. VMware shipped the latest iteration of its infrastructure bundle as well as the beta of a third-generation virtual machine conversion tool. VMware Infrastructure 3 features ESX Server 3.0.1 as well as Virtual Center 2.0.1, which both support 64-bit editions of Linux from Red Hat and SUSE, as well as 64-bit Sun Solaris. As well, the beta of VMware's Virtual Machine Conversion Utility, which was renamed Converter 3, features the ability to convert a physical machine to a virtual one while the source machine continues to operate without disruption to end-user services. It will also convert other vendors' VMs to VMware VMs. Borland says it's readying a new application lifecycle quality management solution that's based on its existing Calibre products, as well as two sets of products it recently acquired. While Borland's LQM solution is primarily aimed at development organizations working in Java, many of the tools in the quasi-bundle run on Windows, and company officials say Borland plans to expand the solution's support to work better with Windows development over time, especially given the integration Borland features between some of its products such as Calibre RM and Microsoft's Visual Studio tools. The LQM solution combines versions of the Silk application lifecycle management products that Borland acquired when it bought out Segway Software in April with the Gauntlet continuous test it acquired in March with the acquisition of Gauntlet Systems and with its Calibre requirements management tools. IBM is announcing an effort to simplify the operating system in programming language that runs mainframes, which often take years for specialists to master. The company plans to spend $100 million over the next 5 years on the project, which will aim to make running mainframe much like controlling any other kind of computer. That means mainframes will finally get more of the graphical interfaces and drag-and-drop controls that are standard on personal computers and servers today. The absence of such features is thought to hinder the recruitment of new mainframe engineers who are in dire need. Because of the long history of the platform, many mainframe experts are nearing retirement. The programming effort, along with IBM's continuous work to encourage mainframe training in university computer science programs, is designed to accelerate the growth of the mainframe, said Jim Stallings, general manager of IBM's mainframe line. And that's how last week shaped up. You can find more of that on the mcpmag.com and certcities.com websites daily. After the break, we jump right into this week's IT Web Gems here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Thanks for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. It's just my weekly reminder that I'm giving away one Redmond t-shirt every week to one lucky person who wins the drawing. To try for one, all you have to do is enter the next giveaway by sending me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's M-I-C-H-A-E-L-D at mcpmag.com. And tell me whether you're a new or regular listener. Any additional comments or feedback, of course, is appreciated, but isn't necessary to make you a winner. I'm real close to a decision right now on whether to cut the interview segment or save it, and we'll make that announcement next week as I get a few more votes one way or the other. Nonetheless, remember that I've got a drawing coming up in a week for a bunch of tech books. All you have to do is send an email to me with "save the interview" or "cut the interview" on the subject line of your message. All votes will help decide the fate of the interview portion of the show, as well as give you a chance to help me clean my office out of any overflow of technical books. I've got some on Active Directory and Windows XP hacking and some on certification. That drawing will take place this Friday, October 13th, so be sure to enter the drawing. And now, this week's official Redmond t-shirt drawing winner is Roxroy Clayton. Very unusual name. Anyhow, congratulations to him and good luck to everyone else next week. Now, in our first shiny new IT Web Gem item. The police usually have good backup when they're on the beat, but the police in one St. Louis department probably shouldn't rely on its IT staff for the same kind of reliability, at least for the time being. The Columbia Tribune reports that police officers have had to use handwritten notes to create a week's worth of crime and traffic reports due to a computer system crash. The story goes on to look at the timing of the computer system crash and the firing of a network admin the week before to the incident. But the investigation chalks it up to coincidence, at least for now. Tobacco or heroin addiction are one thing, but is BlackBerry addiction next? Even though lawsuits here in the U.S. have mostly been settled out of court, they're cause for concern with U.K. employers who are being warned of legal actions that might result if guidelines and warnings aren't put into place for potential BlackBerry addiction. This according to a story in The Independent. The report says that research at the University of Northampton shows that a third of BlackBerry users in the UK have shown signs of addictive behavior derived from the use of the devices, such as denial, withdrawal, and antisocial behavior. The story does point to some anecdotal evidence, citing a story of a woman executive in the US who claimed her disruptive and constant BlackBerry email checking was the cause of her failed marriage. Health officials here in the US are also attributing a painful new syndrome to the device, BlackBerry Thumb. Research in Motion denies that this stuff can be attributed to their device solely, but it has got to love the publicity. You expect IE to be flawed, what with the fix every patch Tuesday it seems, but Firefox? Apparently it has held up pretty well. At a hacker conference, two hackers presenting their claims to an audience said they were able to exploit a flaw in the way the Firefox browser handles JavaScript that would allow them to hijack computers through it. The presentation didn't make Mozilla security experts too happy, who said that the public presentation certainly makes it easier to exploit Firefox. Mozilla even tried using the exploit to no avail. Sure enough, the hackers presented the details to Mozilla, but also apologized prior to Mozilla running a full investigation. Sure enough, the hackers presented the details to Mozilla, which showed that no such exploit existed, and then apologized prior to Mozilla running a full investigation. Nonetheless, one tech news site, Information Week, says that the investigation that Mozilla had already put in place will likely delay the next release of Firefox to ensure that code they send out on the next update is secure. Google is going sentimental with the company purchasing the home and thus the garage rented by Larry Page and Sergey Brin when they created what became the Google search engine. Google didn't reveal what the house sold for, but a search of Zillow properties around the area show values of around $1.3 million for the 1,900-square-foot house and garage that the co-founders rented for $1,700 about 10 years ago. Of course, this pales in comparison to the company's newest digs in New York, where the company has just set up office on a whole city block. From the building of a legacy to one that was put out before it could get started, this is the story of one 18-year-old Derek Jacobs of Boca Raton, Florida, who was recently killed Saturday, September 30th, in a motorcycle accident. Derek Jacobs first hit the news wires when, at 12 years old, he earned the highly coveted MCSE title. 2 years later, his whole family hit the news when they all agreed to be implanted with Verichips live on NBC's Today Show. The Verichip at the time was technology that was supposed to help medical personnel quickly identify implantees and their medical histories. The precocious homeschooled teen began attending the University of Miami at the age of 16, and he was about set to graduate this year but decided to stay on and take pre-med courses before he died in the accident. Immigration is one problem globally, but in the U.S. it's a political issue. Every year, a bill to increase the cap on H-1B visas goes up for debate, and this year, tech companies were supposed to see some relief. A story in the Washington Post, though, says that this hasn't been the case this year, because border security and illegal immigration have knocked any discussion of H-1B visas out of the limelight. The 65,000 H-1B visas that are granted each year are always accounted for immediately, with most visa holders coming from China and India. And there's a Senate plan to increase the visas to 115,000, but the issue of increasing the visas sits in Congress, which hasn't been successful pushing the topic, with all other immigration problems taking precedence. Still, Microsoft, Intel, and other companies who are looking to hire highly skilled foreign workers have been lobbying hard to get some debate on the issue. The hope is that a bill to increase the visas will finally get some traction, now that many members of Congress are fighting for their political lives in the upcoming elections. Nonetheless, a few professional associations and anti-immigrant groups oppose expanding the skilled worker programs, contending that they can depress wages. MCP and Redmond Radio listeners, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this issue. Send them to me at michaeld@mcpmag.com with H-1B visa on the subject line of your message. And for our final item, because the holiday shopping season is approaching, can I tell you about one item I'd like to add to my list? And I'm talking to you like you've got a shopping list with my name at the top of it, of course. You do, right? Okay, let's look at Intel's demo of a dual-screen laptop that it showed off back in 2003, which is going to see the light of day, so to speak. ASUS has developed the first one of these laptops, which sports a screen on the lid that allows someone to scan emails and calendar appointments and do all sorts of stuff without having to fire up and flip open the laptop. The secondary screen has its own power switch and a user interface manipulator pad to give you some control. The capability to work with the secondary screen is available in the upcoming Vista and is officially called Windows Slideshow. Okay, there's something that PowerBook fans might finally be coveting on a Windows laptop. And with that, we conclude this week's IT Web Gems segment. Any of those sound like winners to you? I sure hope so. Even so, if you think you can come up with better, send me a tip at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld@mcpmag.com. And you'll get a Redmond t-shirt if I use it in the next podcast. We'll be back with the Microsoft Headlines of the Week from ENT Mag after this quick break here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Thanks for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Here's what made headlines this week over at entmag.com. Microsoft said last Tuesday it filed an appeal against a 280.5 million euro fine the European Union imposed in July for failing to obey an earlier antitrust ruling. The European Court of First Instance in Luxembourg confirmed it received a faxed copy of the appeal from Microsoft and was waiting for the original to arrive. A spokesman said it was too early to give a date for the hearing, or to say whether the case would be handled separately from Microsoft's other legal challenges before the courts. Microsoft announced it would appeal on July 12th, immediately after it was fined for not complying with an EU order to share information with software developers. The company said it would ask the court to decide if EU regulators were right to claim that it had not supplied complete and accurate technical specifications to rivals making software for servers that help computers running Windows, printers, and other devices on a network talking to each other. Microsoft said the unprecedented fine was unfair, and the EU had not been clear about its demands and how it would present the information. The July fine was the first time the EU fined a company for not obeying an earlier order. The appeal is Microsoft's fourth legal challenge in its long-running dispute with the EU, running back to the EU's March 2004 ruling that Microsoft broke antitrust law by abusing its monopoly. Meanwhile, Microsoft's forthcoming Windows Vista will take much harsher steps to curtail piracy than previous versions of its OS, including crippling the usefulness of computers found to be running unlicensed copies of the new software. The company said that people running a version of Windows Vista that it believes is pirated will initially be denied access to some of the most anticipated Vista features. That includes Windows Aero, an improved graphics technology. If a legitimate copy is not bought within 30 days, the system will curtail functionality much further by restricting users to just the web browser for an hour at a time, said Thomas Lindemann, Microsoft's senior product manager. Under that scenario, a person could use the browser to surf the web, access documents on the hard drive, or log on to web-based email. But the user would not be able to directly open documents from the computer desktop or run other programs such as Outlook email software, Lindemann said. Microsoft said it won't stop a computer running pirated Vista software from working completely, and it will continue to deliver critical security updates. The company also said it had added more sophisticated technology for monitoring whether a system is pirated. For example, the system will be able to perform some piracy checks internally without contacting Microsoft. Microsoft also is adding ways to more closely monitor for piracy among big corporate users who tend to buy licenses in bulk. Microsoft has acquired Desktop Standard, a smaller firm that develops group policy-based enterprise desktop management products. The acquisition of the firm brings the smaller company's GPO Vault, Policymaker Standard Edition, Registry Extension, Software Update, and Share Manager products directly into the Microsoft fold. Desktop Standard's tools are designed to integrate with and extend Microsoft Group Policy Management Console. Microsoft's aim in buying out Desktop Standard is to help customers leverage the value of policy-based management and maximize the value of their investments in Active Directory. That according to a Microsoft press release. All products will continue to be available while Desktop Standard is being assimilated into the larger company. However, Microsoft did not purchase Policymaker Application Security, which will be exclusively available for Beyond Trust Corporation, formerly a wholly owned subsidiary of Desktop Standard. John Moyer, Desktop Standard CEO and co-founder, will become CEO of Beyond Trust. Meanwhile, Desktop Standard CTO and co-founder Eric Voskel will join Microsoft's Windows Enterprise Management Division as a software architect. Microsoft and EMC said they are further expanding their cooperative marketing relationship by working to integrate Office SharePoint Server 2007 with the storage company's Content Documentum content management product. Under the agreement, EMC commits to bring to market new solutions that tightly integrate Documentum with multiple Microsoft products and technologies, including SharePoint Server 2007, the 2007 Microsoft Office system, and SQL Server 2005, as well as enterprise search solutions. The alliance will enable SharePoint users to take advantage of Documentum's high-end content management features. And as expected, Microsoft released what it terms Windows Vista Release Candidate 2 last Friday. The move was widely predicted after at least two Microsoft-focused websites jumped the gun and released information and links pointing to the download earlier in the week. Barring major showstopper bugs, RC2 will be the last release candidate prior to Vista's release to manufacturing later this month or in early November. However, unlike previous Windows development cycles, Microsoft is not planning on releasing RC2 to a wide-scale test audience. Microsoft is distributing this build to a select number of customer preview program participants, in addition to the regular distribution to Tech Beta, TechNet, TAP, and MSDN. And finally, Microsoft announced that the next patch Tuesday will include 11 patches, with at least two rated critical. Six of the patches will relate to Windows, four to Office, and one for Microsoft's .NET framework, the company said in an advanced notification bulletin released on Thursday afternoon. And that's what made news this week on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Be sure to visit entmag.com and redmondmag.com daily for Microsoft news as it happens. As well, continue to send me email if you'd like to be entered into the Redmond t-shirt drawing. You can send those emails to michaeld at mcpmag.com. That's michaeld at mcpmag.com. which is also the address to send me feedback on the show and its contents. I'm Michael D'Amigo. I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to listen to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio, and see you here next week.